Alan Coleman, you just said to the fans there that you might have lost, but it wasn't through shortage of effort.
No, I just think first half was really good, disciplined, structured, smart, took opportunities when they came along. Second half, we got some really good opportunities and just lost tackle one, and we spoke at half time about if we get to tackle five, we will cause them problems. And the first 15, 20 minutes of the half, Gilly's putting them under pressure, kicking in corner, and things are coming good, and then all of a sudden it's an error from them, so we grow, and you just think, yeah, let's kick on here, but we just lose on tackle one too many times, so it cost us massively.
Because first half was much more like the Alan Coleman witness that we've got used to seeing this season.
Yeah, we spoke all week about how important the game is and how we want to be, you know, a team that, you know, they're a full-time team, but we don't fear them. You know, we've got to match their aggression, match their energy, like we've done most of the season, and we did that, and I was comfortable with that, and really happy, and we spoke saying, you know, we had to be better second half, else they'll come stronger, and we knew that, and unfortunately, you know, I've just said in there, their effort was superb tonight. Not through lack of effort. They go down to 12 men, they're still throwing their bodies online. Liam Bent, wow, what immense. Matty Fossard, immense. And, you know, sometimes them passes, they'll come off for you, but tonight they didn't come off for us.
The scrum play, where they forced on the first tackle, was that a key moment in the game? Were you a bit disappointed that the players opted to go for that rather than just camping on their line for a little while?
Yeah, you know, and I'll always back my players, so whatever they decide to do, you know, there's a reason they've done it, and I'll back them. Do I agree with it? Probably not. I'd have probably said, let's build some pressure here. We didn't really ask them to defend the line, if that makes sense. So we threw some nice play, got some good tries, but we didn't really have set on the line where they had to defend off that 5 metres, and be honest. And I thought we'd have got them with how we were carrying ball, but when you're throwing it on tackle one, it's not going to happen, is it?
Did you ever have a discussion about maybe even at 12-0 adding a drop goal? You had a bit of pressure early in the second half. And I know it's quite early, you know, half hour to go was a bit early for adding the drop goal. But do you feel like that might have changed the game in any way?
100%. And, you know, we're saying that because, people might say, after 50-odd minutes. Yeah, after 50-odd minutes. That creates three tries. They have to score three tries. And you know yourself, once somebody drops a goal, you just thinking and you're chasing him, that makes them chase the game more then. But no, we just didn't absolutely execute it, I'm afraid.
I think you looked a little disappointed with the referee after the game. You had two incorrect play the ball calls, both within 10 metres of the Toulouse line, probably the rare time you got that near. Was that the main source of your frustration?
Yeah, I'm not going to be hiding behind anything. We had him against, I don't know who it was against, and I put quite a few things into the RFL, and he's come back to haunt me. Simple as that's where I stand on it. He got demoted the week after our game because he made mistakes, and you can't approach him, you can't speak to him. He's a very arrogant man. And I asked him at end, did he not pull Rodri Lloyd down? Because everybody in the ground saw he pulled him down, but yeah, he said no, go away. So that's where we're at the game at the minute, which is really unfortunate. There's no communications, where years ago you could really have a good discussion with referees and get a bit of feedback and have a bit of fun with them and have a laugh. There is none of that anymore. I thought they were either the quickest team I've ever seen, or, you know, they was crouching and taking opportunities. And if you get away with it, you'll do it. Not happy. Penalty count, that's in there now, it's on the stat sheet, but very high against us. As you said, James, not as though they're in areas where, you know, it's a middle of the field, it's a try scoring opportunity. So, yeah, it killed us.
What about the weather as well? I mean, I was doing another game this day, it was glorious, and then I come to witness and it's absolutely tipping it down, and you've had this 3 weeks running, probably doesn't necessarily suit the way that you want to play. It felt like another, when you got it, it almost felt like it's another slog, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I thought we played well in the conditions. You know, probably best we played in them conditions. Against probably best opposition, but I'm quite biased, but I think we look the best team, I'll be honest with you. With just a couple of things, you want a bit of luck now and again, and when he hit the post, I thought, that's a bit of luck, you know, that's something we need. But no, it wasn't our night, and fortunately not through effort again. They've always got me back on that, and they've got the tone at the minute on that and the shirt. But I've just said it now, we're very fortunate. For 4 weeks, we've had one win for getting it, and it doesn't change this week because somebody's got a win in Featherstone and York. Potentially, if it's a draw, I don't know. But we go Barrow and win. well, you know, we could be having a different discussion after the game though.
Elwar Pellissier came off the bench, very fresh, very lively, top quality player at this level. But, and you know, you've not got that dummy half option on the bench at the moment. But also his introduction came at a time of the game where you'd lost bodies as well. How are all the bodies after that one?
Struggling a bit, to be honest. Benty's had a real bad cut on his face again. He passed his HIA, which was good. Don't know where he's going to be. He has got to Western Hospital now, so it's quite deep. Dan Murray struggling. He went over on his ankle. So yeah, we busted a bit. Mike Butt didn't really want to play him this week, to be honest, but he put his hand up and, you know, give young Regan a go. And, you know, he did well. He made a couple of errors, but it's just the weather. Even the top players of Toulouse made some errors. But yeah, fingers crossed. It doesn't look like we get anybody's back. So, we'll be going. Whatever we go with, we'll be going to win.
Was Mike Butt, did he have a knock? Is that why he was on the bench?
Yeah, he's had a bit of a sore hip for the last few weeks and he struggled to train. And I just felt as though, you know, if we could get through the game without him, it'd be all right. And then he comes on and gets Simbin. But I think he's unlucky, though. He's just reacted and intentionally he's not done it. He's done it for probably Scott to try help the team. Unfortunately, it's cost us a little bit. But yeah, so, you know, he should be good. So he comes in contention. Lloyd Robe is probably in contention. Young Kieran Tyre is in contention. And potentially Brett Bailey's in contention, so you know we'll be fine. We'll be fine with the numbers we've got, but we'll see what happens.
Could Martin Riley play?
Yeah, he'll play at Barrow.
I remember a conversation me and you had at Whitehaven after the game where I said we didn't have to worry about going to Barrow last game, and you said you hoped it didn't get to that, and I assured you it'd be all done by then. Well, I was very wrong. And you've got to go there and win, and of course they've got to win to probably avoid that playoff game. So it's a real tough one.
Yeah, depending on results tomorrow with Swinton and Doncaster, Barrow, you know, be hoping for Doncaster win. I think Swinton go to Bradford the last game, where Bradford, you know, need to win for any hopes. So it's every game means something. I did have a feeling. I said that to you, didn't I? But let's hope. I'm right on both occasions, so we go and win there. But no, listen, it's so easy for people to judge and say they've thrown it away. We've not thrown anything away. I think we've been good this year, I'll be honest with you. We're in a tough comp. We're in a good comp where teams have got some good players and got some money. We've just got to grow, as you can see. We're growing the club, not just the team. We're trying to grow the club. The fans were brilliant tonight, and that's why we wanted to thank them. And if we can hit that 3,000 regular at home, we'll become a stronger club anyway, but also financially it'll help us as well, so we can compete with some of the big boys. At minute, there's a lot of clubs spending a lot more money than us.
So that was Alan Coleman after Saturday's game against Toulouse, and he's been out and about this week at the Widnes Vips event on Wednesday. And Mike, you were in attendance. It appeared from social media to have been positively received, the event. Just let us know what went on and what we found out.
Yeah, it was a fantastic evening. Every time I listen to Alan, really, I think he captures the audience even more. He spoke really well, really passionately, as you'd expect. A lot of points which we'll go through now was mentioned. The night was more of a talk of him and his goals, his ambitions, what's happened, what's to come. And obviously along the way, people chipped in with the questions, which kind of, directed the point of conversation. So I think firstly, the first point to start on, really, because we've got a massive game Sunday, and I suppose it's a do or die, isn't it, James? Really, we win and you're in the playoffs. If you lose, you know, you've got to leave the room. He said from Saturday's game against Toulouse, they took a chance on Bardsley Rowe, so I'm unsure whether he'll make the game up at Barrow. Obviously, we've seen him leave the pitch, was it at half-time? So they took a gamble there. Obviously, he wasn't fully fit. Liam Bent ended up suffering a deep cut, which wasn't far off his tear duct, which would have resulted in him having to have an operation. Unfortunately, you know, that's probably going to leave Benty out for Sunday. Dan Murray obviously left the bridge suite on crutches. I believe it's not as bad as what they first thought, but it's probably more of a 50-50 for Sunday. People will be pleased to know, though, that Martin Riley is probably in line to make his debut, which is a positive. The reason why they've left it to this game was probably due to the pitch at Widnes. They didn't really want that type of injury being the first game being tested against a full-time team in Toulouse, who were very physical and mobile. And then secondly, obviously, you know, the pitch, you know, where there's mud, you've got more rotation in your foot, whereas our pitch, you know, that's less so. And there is, which I won't give away because I don't think it'd be fair to, but I think there's a possibility of seeing one of the players who we would not necessarily expect to see return, potentially being ready to play in the forwards, which would be a massive boost for us. So that was some positives and negatives from the injury front. Whilst we're still staying on players, I'm sure you'll have a bit to say on this, James, but I did ask this question of how much of a say did Alan have on the players who left last year, and I believe Alan got the opportunity to have a say on pretty much all of them. There was one unnamed player which he didn't reveal the identity of, who we offered a deal to, and he would have liked to have kept. My opinion of that is, if I had to stick a pound on who that would be, and the way Alan coaches, he likes to challenge, improving players, players with potential, I'd probably maybe say that might have been Owen Farnworth. And then regarding the players who come in, he said he had a say on a few who arrived. You imagine he had a massive bearing on like Rodri Lloyd, Mike Butt, but not all of the players that were signed this season was Alan Coleman's signings, so to say. So this season, really, you know, going into the off season, whenever that's going to be, is probably going to be Alan's first full recruitment drive, really. So it'd be interesting to see how that shapes up.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I witness haven't announced any new signings for next season yet. I guess after the, you know, after the game this weekend, or potentially after next weekend, depending on the last game is, that's going to hopefully start seeing at least some additions. I know we mentioned last week about the Mazin situation, and my understanding with that at the moment is, although it would appear that because he's gone back to Australia that it had been shut down, my understanding is that it's still a possibility. So I think there's probably going to be I think the awkward part for that situation is there's probably going to be an element of unknown about what's happening over the next few months with it. And I suppose Widnes will have to sit tight and see what happens with the Mazin situation. I guess he's probably a player that you wouldn't mind taking a gamble on if it doesn't, you know, if he, for whatever reason, he doesn't end up playing for Widnes next season, it might be worth taking a gamble, because you know you've got Jack Owens who can play fullback anyway. So, you know, I think the idea of Mazin as an example was that he would play fullback, I think. But if he doesn't end up signing next season, then, you know, of course it means Jack Owens plays fullback and somebody else needs to be signed at centre or wherever. So I think that's going to be it's going to be months until we see that, but it will be interesting to see confirmation of some of the names that we've talked about on this, and, you know, and hopefully there'll be some names that that we haven't spoken about. I think last season there was a couple that pretty much everybody knew about, and then there was a couple of ones that came through that no one had really mentioned. So I think that's the exciting part of this time of year once the games are finished. You know what you say there about clearly recruitment had already been done, or was so already in the throes of being done when Alan Coleman was appointed. So this is the first time, I guess, he's been properly able to have a handle on it. I don't doubt that he would have kept Owen Farmworth. I still don't really understand why the club didn't keep Owen Farmworth, but that's in the past now, I guess, and we move on and see what happens.
Yep. I did actually, just while we're on recruitment and kind of players and stuff, I did catch up with him on Saturday after the game, and I think it's fair to say we spoke a week or two ago about Nick Gregson, and we mentioned him in conversation, and he did say he was keen to obviously have a ball playing loose forward on the pitch as often as possible. So he obviously knows Nick very well and is confident he can have a really good year next year, and that obviously a couple of players who we've been linked to as well kind of fit that mould, so that could point into that being, a more or less done thing as well.
Yeah, I mean, you'll have seen you'll have heard in the interview I asked the question, does it mean, people who aren't on the, who haven't been announced as leaving, are they, does that mean that they're staying? And I think there are still some players that it's up in the air about. I think I understand where potentially negotiations are going on and deals are being talked about. So although they announced, was it 5 or 6 players are definitely leaving, clearly there's still the potential that some of us may depart as well. So, we'll keep an eye out on that in the next few weeks. Was there anything else, Mike?
No, there's quite a bit. Just staying on the player front, I believe we're up to about 26, 27 players sorted out for next season, more or less, give or take. Alan's plan is to try and get to 30. He wants 30 players, try and lean on dual registration as less as possible. Now, what he did say was, when he kind of brought it up, is to get to 30, probably a huge bearing on how far we go in the playoffs. Once you get in the playoffs, I believe it's a shared gate, and if you can get Bradford away, and if you manage to get through that and potentially bump into Wakefield along the way, that's going to put extra cash in the till. Obviously season ticket sales have gone on today, I'm sure we'll cover that as well, so that's going to have a massive bearing on obviously what can be spent. But he spoke as well about some of that, whether it's 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, there's going to be a couple of young players being brought on board there. There was a bit of conversation in the room about Brett Bailey, and he spoke very highly of him. My impression I got that, Alan sees a lot of potential in Brett, and he's keen, to see him again next year, whether that be on a loan basis or as a permanent signing is, yet to be seen. But the impression I got is, obviously Alan's background working in the amateur game, he loves developing players and certainly local players, and Brett is certainly one of them. So it wouldn't surprise me if Brett was here next season either.
He has been at most of the games. Certainly he was, even though he wasn't involved on Saturday, he was around in club gear after the game. I guess if you were looking at profile of signings you want to be making to add to the squad, he certainly would fit into that. The dual registration thing, I think it's difficult because it's worked at the back end of the season, because Widnes have had a need and a gap to play the likes of Lucas Green and Zach Bardsley. I think where it's difficult is when you recruit your squad, when you're recruiting your squad at the start of the year and everybody's fit, it's very difficult for you to then turn around and say, well, actually, instead of playing him, we're going to play a dual reg. And I think pretty much that was the situation that happened this year, really, where Widnes effectively were saying to Warrington, well, we don't need any of your players, we've got our own. Which then meant that when Widnes did need some, maybe there was a bit more friction there than maybe they ought to have been. So, that's another situation to contend with. I think maybe, I don't think it's being Although Widnes have had injuries this year, I don't think it's been as bad as in previous years, to be honest, in terms of... I feel like in previous years, you've ended up playing pretty much everybody who was fit and playing people here, there and everywhere, whereas I don't feel like this season there's been that many games where you felt Widnes are really under strength due to injury. And that was partly down to recruiting more forwards, basically, in the off-season. Yeah, I mean, running with 30 is an interesting one, but of course then that opens you up with the possibility of, well, do you dual reg players the other way, which of course the club has done in the past. Probably hasn't made sense in the past because you only had 22, 23 players. When you've got 30 and maybe you've got three or four sat on the sidelines, well, why not farm them out to a North Wales Crusaders or whatever to get game time? So at least you've got that potential to do that the other way.
Yeah, 100%. You've kind of brought me on nicely to the next couple of points, actually, there, James, because you picked them up. He expressed, he used the winger situation, having four out-and-out wingers. You know, he wasn't really particularly happy with the balance of the squad. Now he's kind of been in there a while, and we've seen, obviously, you know, Kieran Dixon depart, Ollie Brooks as well. You know, he expressed it's important to, you know, have the right balance in the right areas of the pitch. And obviously as well, have players who can play a multitude of positions, which, you know, we've seen with the recruitment drive last year a little bit. You know, we've seen it from players like, you know, I know Max Roberts was already there, but Rodri Lloyd can do that as well. So that massively helps you out when injuries come up, you know, for sure. Just on what you were touching on, about getting people out to North Wales Crusaders, he was particularly keen on, once we get a, you know, hopefully a deeper squad and we have a, you know, a healthy squad with bodies spare, he is keen getting them out on to League One clubs, but also potentially having a bit of a partnership potentially, you know, with Salford's reserves. There's a couple of Widnes lads up in that setup that I'm sure people seen playing on Sky against Wigan last week. You know, there's an opportunity, you know, to maybe work with them a little bit and see what comes of that, maybe. So there's a bit of scope there.
It's interesting because obviously Charlie McCurry played, didn't he? And I think he got Salford's Reserves Player of the Year or something, I think I've seen recently. Obviously, he was in and around the squad at the start of the year. I think he played in the pre-season game at Warrington, but then he sort of just dropped off. I don't know whether it was decided that there wasn't any room for him in the squad at that time, and he ended up going to Salford. I don't know whether that was mentioned.
Yeah, Alan did mention that. It was Alan's kind of advice and decision that he went to Salford. I believe he's been watching him. You know, he's not, like, turned his back and ignored him. He just feels that, unfortunately, the position Charlie's playing, he's probably going to stay there next year, him used as an example, just because of the strength and depth he feels we've got at back row. Obviously, we know the players who we've currently got, Rodri Lloyd, you know, you think Danny Langtree, you know, you've got Max Roberts who can play there, Ryan Lannan who can play there, and then obviously as well, there might be potentially players who we've brought in as well who can play there that obviously Alan knows about that we don't yet. Dual reg was mentioned. Apparently three clubs have approached us to dual partner with them. It was mentioned in passing conversation, a bit of tongue in cheek, that when Alan left Swinton, there was a bit of a conversation with St. Helens and how he wouldn't be able to work with some people there. And then the pitch was brought up. I believe Saints, I'm really keen on dual regging with us because of the pitch. Now, Alan did point out, and he is right, that, you know, St. Helens train on a 3G pitch themselves, and ours is probably newer than theirs. But nevertheless, there's three other teams that are keen. I don't think it takes a brain surgeon to work out one's probably Warrington and one's probably Lee. What Alan did stress, he didn't give away the club that we're probably going to go with. What he did stress was what the dual reg needs to work from us on our part. It can't be all weighed in the Super League club's favour. And he, you know, he was particularly keen on stressing of he wants a partnership where the Super League club understand if we're at a stage in the season where we're looking healthy and fit, he doesn't want a Super League club demanding whether we're playing their players or prioritising their players. It's got to go both ways. So the vibes I picked up, and look, nothing was given away by this, but if I was to put a pound on who he was going to be linking up with, personally, because of his friendship and relationship and trust, obviously, with Derek and Lee, and he obviously does a bit of commentary up there on some of Lee's games as well. If I was to put my pound on it, I think we could well be linked up with Lee, but who knows?
I wouldn't rule out Wigan, to be honest, mate.
There you go, mate. Maybe that's right. The third, mate.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think by process of elimination, there's not a great deal more possible candidates. I think, you know, Wigan partnered with Wakefield, didn't they, ahead of this season? And I think they backed out, or that got cancelled at some point. I think the main issue with Joel Reg is more so when you partner with a club, and I think this probably was where certainly my friction with it was, is when you partner with a club, you don't expect to be playing against their players when you need players in that same position. And we saw that a few times this season with the Warrington situation. And, you know, I get that the clubs need to get their players out playing. But yeah, I think, well, the Joel Reg thing we can debate to a blue in the face, to be honest. But I have no doubt whatsoever that, Alan Coleman, he's a year into it at Widnes now. He'll know how things work. You know, I'm sure the performance of Widnes this season and the way the squad's being managed probably helps sell Widnes as a proposition, perhaps a bit more so than in previous years. The St. Helens thing, I think it's fairly obvious that St. Helens have got issues with the pitch, because otherwise I think St. Helens, it's the most obvious partnership. You know, St. Helens has got so many Widnes lads playing there. I know there's not much difference between Saints and Warrington, but it's the easiest one to get to from Widnes. It's the nearest one. Whether it's short-sightedness or stubbornness or whatever from them about not wanting to use the pitch, I don't know. You only play half the games on the pitch anyway, but that's life. We'll wait and see what happens with that one.
Yeah, absolutely. The last couple of major points, this is an important one because I think this is kind of out of the meeting. Obviously, I put a post up on the Widnes Rugby League fans page about how good the night was, and somebody commented about some of the key points that we've gone over. And one that kind of got, in my opinion, has been lost in translation a bit was the rumour kind of games swapping to a Friday and Saturday. Now, context is key. I don't want anybody listening to this to think we're going to stop playing on a Sunday. That wasn't the conversation. The conversation was they're open-minded to play some Friday and Saturday games when there's key sporting events on. For example, Liverpool and Manchester United, Manchester City and Manchester United, etc., etc., FA Cup finals, whatever it would be. And for me, it might mean a couple of people can't go to a game because they work on a Friday night instead of a Sunday. But on the whole, it's just, for me, using your brain. We're not a powerhouse sport. The Championship certainly isn't. You only have to look at our attendances at the moment, and you've got to give yourself a chance to get as many people in the stadium as possible. And I know people, when certain games are on, they won't come to the stadium. They prefer to go and watch something else on Sky or on the telly with family, etc., etc. So for me, I just think it's a smart business decision.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little on the fence. I think games at Widnes's ground are much better at night. Like, I even last week, I feel like the vibe of the place and the feeling is much better in night games. I have a fairly strong opinion that I think games being at 3 o'clock on a Saturday or games being regular are very important. But at the same time, as long as it wasn't loads of games and they weren't moved in short notice and that you knew of them well in advance, I don't see any dramas particularly with having the odd one move. You know, maybe, you know, certainly outside the football season, like if you tried a Saturday night game, maybe it's difficult without knowing exactly what you want to do. But yeah, I mean, it's quite depressing to think that people won't go because Man United are playing Liverpool and they'd rather watch that on telly. But I suppose that's the nature of the beast at the moment, I suppose. You know, I'd be against going up against, you know, I don't see much value in playing on a Friday night if there's a Super League game on. But if there's no Super League game on, then, you know, maybe it would work. I think you've got to be careful with the away fans. You know, Toulouse worked on Saturday. You know, you got 3,000 there, even though there was, you know, 10 away fans or whatever it was. But yeah, I think you're right. I think what you said there at the end is it's all about being intelligent about it. Ultimately, if Man United and Liverpool playing knocks however many hundred off the gate, then, you know, so be it, move the game. But then I would also counteract that and say, well, early this season, they shut part of the North Stand to save £700, and that probably put off X number of people going. So I think you've just got to be careful that you're looking at everything in that regard. And yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. It certainly suits, like, I mean, it's great. I think it's great all the games on a Sunday at 3, because, you know, right, I'll just make sure I'm never busy at 3 o'clock on a Sunday. Whereas if then things do get moved, it becomes a bit awkward then, because you're like, well, actually, I am free this Sunday, but actually the game's on Friday or Saturday. And yeah, it'd be interesting how that pans out anyway.
Yeah, I think the majority are going to stay on a Sunday at 3, James. But my second option, I think you've covered it well, really, my opinion, really. You know, if there was a second option, it'd be Saturday evening. You know, I think Friday for a lot of people is a bit of a rush, you know, to get home. But yeah, hopefully there'll be few and far between.
Yeah, I mean,
James, go on.
Sorry, yeah, no, just to finish on that. Yeah, I mean, like I say, I don't think, you know, if you have back-to-back home games, you know, why not try one week on the Saturday, one on the Sunday, you know. Yeah, we'll see how that pans out anyway.
Last couple of points. I know with this one, Dan, because obviously we've had quite a lot of questions about it. You know, it's the Alan Killshaw investigation. It did come up. Somebody did mention it. Alan referred to it almost being complete from his understanding and knowledge. He didn't say too much about it because, of course, it's an ongoing investigation and it's not his place to say.
The hearing's next week.
Yeah. Well, but I believe statements have been given out by Alan himself, Rodri Lloyd, Nick Gregson and Chris Hamilton. So that probably indicates who was involved, X, Y and Z. And, you know, it'll all be dealt with and we've just got to see what the outcome is. I don't think the clubs have had much dialogue between them. I don't think it's wise to do so, is it? So no, you just got to leave it to the powers that will be.
I'm not sure what people... I'm not sure what the... I don't want to get myself into trouble here, but I'm not really sure what the obsession is with it, to be honest, from people. I don't know what they're expecting to see the outcome to be. Clearly it's an issue for Nick Gregson and for the club and for, you know, and the RFL are investigating it, but I'm not really sure what... I don't really know what people have to gain from knowing what's going on and what they're expecting the outcome to be honest. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to benefit Widnes in any way, shape or form, to be honest. And it would be a shame if that incident causes friction between the two clubs moving forward, you know, because Swinton's has always been a decent away ground to go to. Widnes always take a decent number. There's that many Yorkshire teams in the league. It's nice to have a team this side of the Pennines that you can go and there not be that animosity, and yeah, we'll see how it, we'll see what pans out this week.
Yeah, I think a lot to do with that as well. I think, you know, the people who have been affected by it and stuff, and I've heard a couple of people speak, it depends what's happened in their private life and people who are close to them and what it kind of relates to, I guess, that was seen, you know, how that kind of touches people. But yeah, just got to see how it kind of pans out, really. He confirmed as a coach he has aspirations, you know, to go all the way to the top. And, you know, he's in the process of setting foundations, and he does see, you know, Widnes being a club who we can, you know, we can climb up and, you know, potentially, you know, be in, you know, Super League one day. You know, foundations being set in terms of, you know, the development, the youth development that's, you know, been obviously big these past couple of months. And also the launch of season ticket sales, you know, Alan, having spoke to him, he has a very, very clear idea in his head how many season tickets he wants to be sold. And believe me and you, the man is on a crusade, and he will not stop until they are sold. He's planning on, you know, players being involved, him, the staff, flocking into Asda, retail parks, the market, Morrison's, you name it, getting out there, getting to the schools, etc., etc., speaking full of passion as he does. I have no doubt he'll probably achieve the target. People are buying into it. We've seen very recently today, you know, the club have put out a post about season tickets slightly going up from last year. As far as I seen before we started doing this podcast, I didn't see one negative comment, which I think speaks volumes of how far we've moved forward from last year. I think, you know, at this stage last year, everything the club posted, you know, there was a lot of, you know, downbeaten fans commenting and, you know, expressing concerns and feelings, and it, you know, a lot of it was negative. Just as I touched on the you know, the youth program that I'm sure everybody's been, you know, keeping tabs with. Alan did confirm already there's been a lad in that who played in a recent game who Warrington have picked up and taken, which I thought was fantastic. You know, considering it's been going a couple of months, and I believe, you know, it been going through the systems, and, you know, it not quite worked out, and he come down to Widnes, and, you know, he was playing with a smile on his face, a bit of freedom, and Warrington have took a chance and took him. Now, people listening to this will go, do you know what? Oh, that's another example of a player leaving. But actually, we're in the early stages of it, and what Alan spoke about setting foundations is you've got to set the foundations to get to the top of a pyramid. And right now, you know, we don't have a proper academy set up, but what we can do is young players that we get, we can help develop, pass them on. By doing so, you're building relationships with other clubs, which obviously helps recruitment at the first team level. But also, you know, that lad who was mentioned who's moved on, you know, hopefully it does work out for him at Warrington. But if it doesn't, I am sure he's very grateful of the part that, you know, Alan's coaching staff have had to play in his development, and he may return one day.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting debate. I think it almost highlights part of the problem, really, because you're like, well, what's the point in doing it if the pro clubs up the road are just going to come along and take the players? It's difficult when you're part-time, because ultimately a full-time club's always going to be more attractive to go to. But I think at the moment there's not really an alternative. You've just got to try and sit tight. I think what it probably highlights is it's probably unlikely that we're going to see players anytime soon coming from that into the first team, just because I feel like any players that are going to be good enough are probably going to end up at least getting a tryout in Super League, you know, in an academy setup or a reserve setup before they wind up at Widnes. And sort of like what you were saying there, I guess what you're wanting to do is make sure that at least if for whatever reason they don't make it, that they end up at Widnes in the long term. I suppose that's the best that we can hope for at the moment.
100%. And, you know, I always like to remind people as well, you know, look at our squad this season, how many Widnes lads are in it. And not everybody makes Super League, but that doesn't mean to say you can't be a top championship player. And, you know, we've got a lot of benefits in our current squad from our academy that was set up years ago. So, you know, it's not the be-all and end-all, of course. It's not ideal. You don't want a player going to a rival club. You don't. But unfortunately, this is year one of it. And I'm sure the idea is to gradually get back to where you've got some sort of academy again. But obviously, that's the long-term vision, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that was more or less it, really. I mean, what I will say is, if anybody wants to put questions after this about the Vips night, feel free, because these was just the main points. It was, Alan was there till about 10 o'clock. It went on for about 2 hours and there was a lot of conversation. So if you put a question, it might pluck my memory to something else that was mentioned on the night, and I can maybe pick up with it next week. But I think they was the major points, really.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, Mike, Widnes have announced season tickets. Like you say, there's generally a positive. They have acknowledged that the price has gone up. To be honest, I both like the fact that they've done that, but then I do sort of think they've maybe been a bit too caught. You know, I guess they would have got criticism if they'd not acknowledged it. But I think half the post is basically about how the price has gone up, whereas I think maybe they could have lent a bit more on the progress that's been made. Anyway, the price hasn't gone up a dramatic amount. I think an early bird has gone up £25. The standard's gone up £20. I'm talking about adults here. So you're looking at £240 for a standard. But if you get a standard adult, but if you get the early bird, it's £225. Concessions is £190 for the early bird and £215 for the standard. Junior, secondary school junior age is £60, early bird £70 standard, and primary school junior age is £35, early bird £45 standard. Now, there is a change in the championship next season that I don't think this has been publicised yet, Mike. Correct me if I'm wrong, I'm a bit out of the loop on some of this stuff. But so there's 13 teams in the championship next season. So you will play 12 home games, which is one fewer than this season. Now, I don't know whether that's been acknowledged in the release. I've only skimmed through it. Because there's going to be the playoffs next season is going to be more, it's for the top eight teams. So next year's playoffs will be top eight, and they're playing in an NRL, in the NRL style system. Yeah, that I don't know how to explain it better than that. But then the top four basically play each other. I don't know how to easily explain this, Mike. But in the NRL, the top four teams play each other, and the losers then play the
winners. They're like eliminators, aren't they, and stuff the like that.
Teams. Now, I don't know whether that means, well, you can't be guaranteed a home game, because if you finish eighth, you're probably not going to have a home game. So you've got the Challenge Cup game, of course, with the new Challenge Cup format. I don't know whether that's a guaranteed. I can't remember whether it was guaranteed that you'd get one at home. I mean, there's more championship clubs than Super League. So, yeah, that hasn't been addressed in the thing, but that's what the format's going to be next season, and then it's going to change slightly the season after it, I believe, because the championship will go down to 12 teams. But so next season, it'll be top eight playoffs, which, I mean, increases Widnes' chances of getting it to it at least a lot more. But, yeah, it'd be interesting to see where that extra home game comes from.
Yeah, well, maybe something behind the scenes there is they're obviously maybe finalising things with the RFL, and there's still certain conversations going on. Who knows? But yeah, you'd like to think it will be factored in at some stage, because that obviously does mean a bit of a difference, doesn't it? If the price has slightly gone up, plus you're not getting an extra game as well, you know, in terms of value for money. So, you know, hopefully it's not an oversight, and it is something that's going to be addressed. But yeah, just on that structure, you know, it wouldn't be rugby league, would it, without another change and adding to the complexity of it.
So, well, it gets better than that. So obviously the long-term aim is to get to the Super 8. Well, it's not a long-term aim, it's a mid-term. The season after next, they'll have the Super 8. But what it basically means is the teams that finish in the bottom four of the Championship next season will play in a... They play in the with the top four of League One, but they're only going to play, I think, four games in it. So instead of playing every, you know, like the old Super 8, you played seven. They're not doing that. That's far too straightforward. They're just going to have four games against each other, whatever. And then the top two will be in the Championship the following season, right? Now, as a quirk, what that means is the team that finishes ninth in the Championship next season, they'll just stop playing. So the team that finishes ninth, when the regular season finishes, they won't play any more games, but every other team in the Championship will carry on playing. So
yes, we're witness are likely to finish.
Yeah. So you're almost thinking, well, you know, I don't want to finish ninth really, because then you're playing a couple of less games. So that's a quirk, because Championship's going down to 13 teams for next season. The plan is that it goes down to 12 the season after that. And then I think the season after, when it has gone down to 12, I think the format will probably go more akin to the old Super 8s when it was Super League, whereby, well, I think this has happened. I'm not 100% sure, but my understanding is then it'll go to you play each team in your eight, if that makes sense. And that would effectively mean that there's extra games in the season. I hope that's where they're getting to, but I haven't had confirmation on that yet.
And then if that does go ahead, people listening to this might as well put money on the last game of the season, ninth plays 10th, and both teams want to lose the game so they play more games.
Well, I mean, as one club chairman did say to me, as much as you'd lose the revenue from finishing ninth, it's weighing whether it's worth the risk of potentially getting relegated by finishing, you know, if you finish 10th, you might end up getting relegated. So, it's... interesting times, as it always is.
All fun and games ahead. I suppose it gives us something to talk about in the off season, James. If that one,
we'll no doubt have to do an episode just solely on that to try and explain it, because I've made a right pig's ear of it there. But looking ahead then to the final game the final game of the regular season, Barrow away on Sunday. It was the game that I assured Alan Coleman Widnes wouldn't need to win to make the playoffs, and I was incorrect. Widnes need to win. Contrary to some posts I've seen, it is all in Widnes's hands this weekend. There is the potential, as we hinted upon in this podcast, actually, that York and Featherstone could contrive to draw, which would get them both in the playoffs and mean that Widnes don't make it. On points difference. Now, only 2% of Championship games have ended in a draw this season, so it would be particularly suspicious if York and Featherstone do draw. I think, based on what I've seen, I think York are probably the form team. I think they'll beat Featherstone. Even if they did draw, though, it's still in Widnes's hands, because if Widnes were to win by 58 points, they would leapfrog Featherstone on points difference. So that's why it's definitely in Widnes's hands regardless. The state of play, Wakefield are finishing first, Toulouse are finishing second, Bradford are definitely finishing third. And that's, well, it gets a bit tricky then. York have got 28 points, Featherstone have got 28 points, Sheffield have got 28 points. And Widnes have got 27. I think that's right, isn't it? I've got that right. Yeah. Sheffield are playing Dewsbury. So, you know, Dewsbury haven't been doing anything this year, really. They're bottom. They're already relegated. I think they've won one game the whole season. So you can pretty much say that Sheffield are going to win that game and they'll be in the playoffs. But for Widnes, it's you've got to win and hope that York and Featherstone don't draw. And then ultimately, if Widnes do get in the playoffs, they can only finish sixth, really. That's the bottom line, unless Dewsbury upset Sheffield, you're potentially finishing fifth. But if Widnes do finish sixth, they'll be playing Bradford away in the playoffs. And that's the state of play, Mike.
Yeah, I think around the championships on Sunday, Widnes will be probably the most looked at score on the BBC website. You know, other sides looking how we're getting on, especially spectators at the Featherstone and York game. But it's simply, isn't it? Do or die, you've got to win. I think you've got to win. You know, we're going up there a bit bruised, a bit battered. But, you know, hopefully we'll have Martin in there and another forward, you know, to give us a leg up and a boost. It's simple as, I think you've got to complete, haven't you? Complete your sets. If we play anything near what we did in the first half against Toulouse, I think we'll sail home to victory. I do believe that. But it's interesting, finishing sixth, I think financially probably helps you, because I think, like you've just alluded to, playing Bradford at Oddsall, you probably got the, in terms of the split of the gate, obviously, which will hopefully go towards recruitment and bringing one or two more players in, you know, you get a better financial reward there. And then hopefully, you know, if you progress past that, another game and potentially further. So I don't think it's a bad thing actually finishing sixth if it goes that way. Not to mention, we've beat Bradford three times. I mean, unbelievably, you know, that's the way it happened out this year.
Twice, and you know, two of those three were at Oddsall as well. So, like you say, I think actually looking at it, playing Bradford away is probably the best Widnes could hope for at the moment. Well, it is the best Widnes could hope for. But actually, if you'd have offered that to Widnes, they probably would have took it. The interesting quirk of the final day is that, of course, Barrow could still, in theory, end up in this relegation playoff against the League One playoff winners, which will be one of Keighley, Rochdale and Hunslet. To preserve their championship status. As things stand, Barrow have got 19 points and Swinton have got 18. But Barrow will definitely go into this game feeling like they need to win, because Swinton, although they're away at Bradford, of course, Bradford haven't got anything to play for. They're locked in third. They can't finish. Because they lost to Toulouse, because Bradford lost to Halifax last week, they can't get past Toulouse anyway. I mean, Toulouse would likely beat Batley anyway. But Bradford can't be caught by anyone beneath them. So Bradford are definitely finishing third. So the argument to say, well, they might save a few players, save themselves for the playoffs. And that then means that Swinton turn them over, which then means Barrow need to win to avoid the dreaded relegation playoff.
Yeah, you're right. Now, what you've just said there is a potential. Although I've heard a little interview today with Eamon O'Carroll that suggests he's not going to do that, but who knows? You know, he could be just saying that and then obviously field a couple of the young lads and say, well, it was my decision anyway. We've heard coaches do that before. But also, it's Barrow's last game at home. You know, they're going to want to win. It's as simple as that. If we'd had the season what Barrow have had and we was playing at our stadium, this weekend, I'd want to be winning. Just touching upon, obviously, the game again, and like what to expect from Barrow. You know, I think they rested a few last week against Wakefield, so they're going to have fresh bodies coming back, and I think they're going to be firing on all cylinders. You know, I don't think it's going to be any particular secret of what we're going to expect off them. You know, we're going to have to roll our sleeves up, go to war a little bit, you know. In the middle, you go up Cumbria and the middles tend to be big, strong, aggressive, powerful. They're going to try and rough us up. You mentioned actually the 58 points, actually, which is just, it's just ticked something in my memory from the Vips. I did ask myself about where we could improve on field for next year. And Alan did say, you know, about, he mentioned 3 points. He mentioned game management, which he agreed with, being a bit more aggressive at times in the middle. But he did always say, he did also say, and I think it was probably the most important of the three, be a bit more ruthless in terms of scoring points. You know, when you're on top in games, I think that's probably something that we potentially haven't done in games, and we've been, you know, dragged back a little bit. But I don't see a 50-odd point ball game to avoid that scenario in our favour. I think it's going to be one of them games where early doors, it's going to be tight. I think it could be even Stevens at half time, you know, a couple of points either way. And I'm hoping we have enough, you know, to sail home. I think we have to be playing in the opponent's half. I think obviously the Toulouse game, second half, I know there was a bit of animosity towards the referee at the end, which Alan's massively apologised for at the Vips night, and I believe he's been in touch with the referee as well, and, you know, tempers did spill over a little bit. But aside from the refereeing decisions, you know, that second half, yes, we were losing bodies, and you could see Toulouse creeping back into the game. But again, you know, when we did get down the opponent's half, you know, we had Jack Owens, like, sending us towards the touchline on play one from a scrum when you finally got a bit of ball back. Liam Kirk, the ball goes out into touch to get into their half. Tap, restart, bang, drop the ball, play one. You know, underneath the post when you've got, you know, you're scrapping to maybe get a final try, and incorrect play the ball, which was one of the points where Alan was a bit frustrated at the referee, but nevertheless, an incorrect play the ball, whether it was the right or wrong decision, that is the part of the game we need to take out. It's as simple as that. And it's a little bit of a, like, almost for me, feeling building up to the game. It's got that kind of semi-final feel almost, where you know what the rewards are at the end of it, and you know there's a bit of pressure on the game, you know. So
I think you know, we've obviously, with us bringing this out late this week, we've not really touched on the Toulouse game. My short points are: Widnes should have dropped the goal at 12-0. They should have dropped the goal at 12-6. Would have changed the mindset of the game. I completely empathise with Alan Coleman's frustration. You can't tell me that the only two incorrect play of the balls in that match just so happened to be when Widnes were 10 metres away from the Toulouse line. I don't buy that whatsoever. But it is what it is. You can't control them situations, unfortunately. All Widnes can do now is look ahead to this week and see where they get to. You may have seen this week as well that Danny Craven and Lewis Ells, two Widnes, former Widnes players, have been shortlisted for League One Player of the Year. Craven at Oldham, obviously, and Ells is at Rochdale. They both could, in theory, be in a Championship next season. Sam Brooks has got a two-match ban, which won't affect Widnes unless Widnes make the playoffs, because he's free to play this week against his former club, Barrow. But he'll miss the next two games after that, one of which will be hopefully a playoff match, but that potentially will be a loss for Widnes as well. But final game of the season, I know Mike's going to say Widnes will do it, so I'm not even going to ask him. But yeah, I think that's it from us. Hopefully we'll have a game to talk about next week. But as always, thanks everyone for listening. Any final surmises, Mike?
No, just anybody listening who hasn't booked on the coach yet, please scrap around for places. Get yourself up there to Barrow. If you're umming and ahhing or driving, get in your car, get up there. The lads need you. Any little advantages we can gain by making some noise, we need it.
Very good. He's been to his Alan Coleman school of encouraging fans, I think, there, Mike. That's what he did on Wednesday night. Thanks, everyone, for listening, as always. Sorry we was a bit late this week. We'll be back next week with the fallout from the Barrow game, and hopefully we'll have a playoff game to look forward to. Please do leave your comments and your questions on Twitter or Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen, and also on the Widnes Rugby League fans Facebook page. But from myself and Mike, that's goodbye for now.